This episode of the show is brought to you by Audible. You can get a free 30-day trial and free audiobook of your choosing by going to audibletrial.com/missspots. Choose from over 180,000 different titles, such as Chris Jericho's latest book, No is a Four-Letter Word. It's even narrated by the man himself. Audiobooks are perfect for the person on the move. Believe me, they're great. Maybe you want a mystery novel or a biography of someone you love. Audible has it all. Plus, it's free to try. If you don't like it, which would be weird, cancel and keep your free audiobook that you downloaded forever. Go try it now at audibletrial.com/missspots. Audible. Listening is the new reading. Welcome back to the Miss Spots podcast on missspots.com, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn, and Geek Life Radio. My name is Mike, and with me as always is the Nicholas to my Braun Strowman. Here's Kevin.
Oh yes, the classic professional wrestler Nicholas, the 12-year-old boy. I've never been as proud to be related to a wrestler as I ever have been in my life.
We will be talking about him for years to come. First ballot Hall of Famer, I believe, as well.
But he is actually the son of a referee on the WWE roster, so there is a possibility he'll end up growing up in the business and end up being a world champion someday. What do you think?
And end up being hazed by JBL.
Of course.
So the biggest weekend of the year just took place. We have NXT TakeOver. We have WrestleMania, the grandest of all stages. Raw and SmackDown that we need to go over with you guys. So let's jump right into things here with NXT TakeOver New Orleans. In what I believe is becoming a common thing for me to say after every NXT TakeOver, this might be the best TakeOver ever. The matches from top to bottom, opening to close, were all very good to fantastic. And it just seems like each time we think that they might be getting to a lull period, they don't do that at all.
Well, the talent on the roster is so great, and I think the first match of the night was the ladder match, which I think showed a hell of a lot of talent. Am I right?
Yeah. I mean, you had six people in there for over 30 minutes in the opening match that all, I think, were elevated tremendously for being in this match. Velveteen Dream was jumping off the top of a giant ladder, delivering an elbow drop. Ricochet was jumping all over the place. Killian Dane, Lars Sullivan matching up against one another. EC3 being just the charismatic creature that he is. And then the winner, Adam Cole. And he wasn't the person who we predicted, but I think with the storyline that's going on with Undisputed Era right now, that it was probably the right call to put the title on the leader of the Undisputed Era.
Yeah, that was my question to you, whether or not you think it was the right call to do that. Adam Cole has been a major part of programming, and this makes their faction even more dominant, I believe.
Yeah, and we'll talk a little bit more about them in just a moment because there was much more story driven towards the Undisputed Era after the tag team match. But we followed this up with the NXT Women's Championship match, Ember Moon defending against Shayna Baszler. Shayna, with the, I would say, upset win, defeating Ember Moon by technical submission as Ember Moon passed out in the sleeper hold, and she becomes the new champion. Now, after seeing Raw and seeing Ember Moon being called up, it's not that surprising that they made the switch in the title that quickly, because Ember had just won the title at the previous takeover. But I think that we always have to see evolution seemingly in this women's division because of how important all of these women are to it. The call-ups happen pretty often, so they roll with those punches pretty well.
Yeah, and I was not able to watch this show yet, and I haven't been able to watch NXT in, quite honestly, a very long time. Being a new father has kind of zapped a lot of my time, so unfortunately I did miss this. Was this a good match? Because I know I heard some mixed reviews on Shayna Baszler, and what did you think about the match overall?
I thought it was a good match. I hate saying this, worst match of the card, which is not saying that it was a bad match. There were some interesting parts to it. I love the story being told that Shayna dislocated her shoulder and was using the ring post to pop her shoulder back into the socket. Like, it looked brutal, her doing that, and she was selling pain in doing that very well. And I know that that's been done before, but I haven't seen it in so long that I can't remember who the last person I saw do that little spot was. I still think that, and I complained about this in their last match, is Ember Moon's, the amount of time she spent in the submission hold before ultimately passing out. Any other person caught in a trained MMA person's rear naked choke is going to go out pretty quick.
But this is professional wrestling. I know. Mike. I mean, there's,
but it seemed like 2 minutes that was a struggle for this. And that just seems far too long. It was probably less than that, but, probably far less than that, but it just seemed like forever her fighting to try to get out of it.
Okay.
Then we had the triple threat tag team match for the NXT Championship and the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic Trophy, with the Undisputed Era's Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly taking on the Authors of Pain and Pete Dunne and Roderick Strong. Now, Adam Cole filling in for Bobby Fish, who was injured previous to TakeOver and unable to compete. The Undisputed Era retains after Roderick Strong turns on Pete Dunne, delivers an end of heartache to him, and pulls an unconscious Kyle O'Reilly on top, excuse me, to get the pinfall, retain the titles, and Roderick Strong has joined the Undisputed Era.
Well, this is the cap off to a story that they were teasing months and months ago.
Yeah.
So I think that's a nice little tie-in there, especially since you had Roderick Strong teaming with someone that was not a traditional tag team partner for him. It's probably a good move, and especially with you have Bobby Fish being out, and whether this was a plan all along or they kind of probably had to pull him into it, it's probably more likely. But overall, I mean, it sounded like a logical turn for me.
Yeah, and I think that this may end up leading into a feud with Dunne and the rest of his faction from the UK, British Strong Style, with Trent Seven and Tyler Bate.
Which would be great because it would give those guys something to do on that roster.
Yes, absolutely. Then we had the NXT Championship match. Andrade Cien Almas defending against Aleister Black. What I completely forgot until they mentioned during commentary of this is this was the same exact match that Aleister Black had in his debut a year ago at TakeOver Orlando. It was against Almas. That was exactly my reaction to that, because Almas 1 year ago was such a completely different wrestler and character than he is now. He has come such a long way from that point. Aleister Black wins and claims the NXT championship after a lot of interference from Zelina Vega. I think it was probably four times she interfered, although the last time ended up backfiring on them. And she went for a crossbody and accidentally hit Almas. Almas caught her, and Black hit Almas with a black mass while he was holding Zelina Vega. Nice little spot in there. And then now he is the top of the food chain in NXT.
Well, I kind of called this, and I believe you did as well. I'm very high on Aleister Black. I think he could do great things in the main roster. I do think he may have a ceiling because of his size when it comes to the main roster. I hope I'm wrong. But from everything I've heard, Almas did a great job with that title. And that's really exciting, because that was a guy they were very high on early on, and I wouldn't be surprised to see him on the main roster sooner rather than later.
He really did do a great job as a champion, and really you got to give a lot of credit to Zelina Vega, who was his mouthpiece throughout a lot of this because he doesn't speak English. So she did a great job of building up his character as well. And I think that this will be because we didn't see Almas get called up, at least this week, that we may still possibly see a feud go on here. It'd be nice to see a feud, because it seems like one thing with NXT is after a title changes hands, they very rarely continue that feud. It seems to usually be the end at that point.
Well, there's exceptions to the rule, but they're farther in the past, I believe.
Yeah. I mean, we had Joe and Nakamura exchange the title a few times, and that feud went on for a lengthy amount of time. But it seems all too often that once the titles exchange hands, that feud is over.
So you think there's more mileage left in
this feud? I do think that there is.
Okay, good.
And then the main event was the unsanctioned match between Tommaso Ciampa and Johnny Gargano. And this match was ridiculously good. I mean, match of the year candidate right here. The story being told, the frustrations with one another, the pain that those two have gone through with one another in the past almost year. It was beautiful. I love the little touch of the referee only wearing a black polo shirt instead of the stripes because it's unsanctioned. This went nearly 40 minutes and never dropped in intensity, really. And then the last few minutes that led into the finish were incredible. And I talked about how I wished that a match like this would have been later in their feud. I wish that there would have been some points where Ciampa wins a whole bunch and Johnny just can't quite get over that hump. But then Johnny ultimately is victorious. I mean, this is the perfect match, would have been the perfect match for the end of that. But they book things a little differently here and made it. I don't know if this is the blow off. I can't really see that unless one of these two gets called up to the main roster at maybe the superstar shakeup, but what a fantastic match, really.
So we've been talking about the prospect of this match being something very special they have in their back pocket for a long, long time. And did it live up to everything that you'd hoped it would be?
Oh, yeah. It probably exceeded it.
That's wonderful. Yeah, this is one of the matches that I need to go back and watch this just to watch this match, if for nothing else.
Yeah, if you don't watch anything else on that pay-per-view, which I know it can be hard to set aside 2.5 hours of your time to watch all that, if you can set aside like 45 minutes to watch that match, it's well worth it.
Sounds great.
So now let's head into... Oh, by the way, I'll grade this A+. Great show.
Excellent.
Heading into WrestleMania, we had 14 total matches on this card. So pre-show kicked things off with the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal, which was won by Matt Hardy. We got one, and we didn't get many right on this pay-per-view. He eliminated Baron Corbin with the help of Bray Wyatt, who showed up, and Bray Wyatt is now a part of the Woken universe and has sided with Woken Matt Hardy.
So the more I think about this, I wasn't a huge fan of this when it went down, but it makes sense. I still think they need to change, do some tweaks to Bray's presentation and stuff to make this work. They seem so gun-shy to do this nowadays because these wrestlers build a brand and they're afraid that they're going to lose that brand somehow. Yeah. They can't be afraid with this here. I think there's some interesting stuff. The stuff on Raw was good between these guys. But overall, he was the only real option that made any sense because it's not really going to go anywhere, I don't think, championship-wise. But it made the crowd happy.
Yeah, it really did. And it was a nice way to kick things off. What they'll end up doing with it, we don't know. We'll see. Then we had the finals of the Cruiserweight Championship Tournament. Cedric Alexander against Mustafa Ali. This was a really fine match between these two. Cedric goes over, but we had, man, especially the last few minutes of this match with Ali getting kind of heelish and Cedric kind of being like, stay down. And it got intense. And these guys definitely went out there with the intent of trying to steal the show. And I think they did a really good job.
You know, I like the storytelling in this, but I thought the match was actually less than what they are capable of doing. And I think a lot of it had to do with the time they had and just the interest from the crowd. I liked all the things you mentioned as far as the storytelling aspects, but the match left the overall match left something to be desired for me.
Okay. And then we had the Women's Battle Royal with Naomi eliminating Bayley. We didn't really care for the end of this match because we thought we had Bayley and Sasha as the last two and Bayley getting the win, but apparently Naomi just waiting on the outside was not eliminated, comes in and throws out Bayley. Weird tactic for a babyface to do.
I am so sick and tired of Battle Royals and Royal Rumbles, people just hanging out on the outside of the ring. It is so annoying. It should be almost like a lumberjack match in the fact that the referees have to get the people back in the ring. It's really stupid. I can't stand when they book things this way. It's lazy booking. It's a surprise for the sake of a surprise. I don't think this worked. I don't understand who that serves. And Naomi's been a middling character for a long time. Bayley and Sasha actually have some spotlight on them. It would have made a lot more sense for one of them to go over. Overall, I thought this was a big down. It didn't make a lot of sense to me. I didn't like the way they booked it.
Yeah, it really did. But it was what it was. That ended the pre-show. And we kicked things off on the main show with a good one. With the triple threat Intercontinental Championship match. Miz defending against Finn and Seth. We got Seth going over in an entertaining match. I don't think it was as good as we maybe thought it could have been. Maybe we overhyped what we thought would come out of it, but it was still a fine match. Seth Rollins is the new Intercontinental Champion, and I think you even said afterwards it was probably the right call to put the title on him.
Yeah, and I think he was both of our picks here.
I thought you picked Finn.
No, I picked Seth.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah. I think this was a fine match. It's not going to go down in history as the greatest triple threat match of all time, but they did a good job with it. I liked the touch of Miz not bringing the Miztourage down to the ring, going in at himself. They're going to keep this feud going on to a certain degree on Raw. This was a really good way to kick things off, and I liked it for the most part.
Yeah, I thought it was fine, and then we went right into, I think, one of the first big surprises of the evening. Charlotte Flair defending her SmackDown Women's Championship against Asuka and successfully defending it, breaking Asuka's streak, and something that I think very few people saw coming.
this WrestleMania will be, well, if it goes down in history, it will be as a very surprising card. There were a lot of matches that we thought were no way they were going to go this way or the other, and they definitely swerved us. I don't know. Sometimes they do that just for the sake of doing it. I have to give them ups for subverting the conventional wisdom in some of the booking. I don't know if it's always the right choice to make, but that's neither here nor there. I think you sacrifice Asuka's streak without her ever winning a championship. I think that's a problem. I don't think that's great booking, but to me, this makes Charlotte Flair the most important woman in the company not named Ronda Rousey. At the end of the day, Charlotte is a homegrown talent. Asuka is not. Charlotte is a younger talent. Charlotte is a more well-rounded talent in the fact that she can cut promos and is one of the best promos on the women's roster, if not the best. So I see why they would do this. I just don't know if this was the right timing for it, but good for them. And just, you know, the most important thing, who cares what we thought about the ending? What a great match. This was the best women's match ever, I think, in the history of WrestleMania. Now, most years have seen awful, if none to awful women's matches that were all around TNA and not actually about serious wrestling. But this set the bar high, and I think that they did exceed expectations, or at least meet our very high expectations of what this match was. It was fast. It was hard. It was fast paced. It was hard hitting. It had some great spots, great submission wrestling, great counters. I really enjoyed this.
Yeah, it really was, as you said, probably the best women's match in the history of WrestleMania.
And I'd call it the best match on the card. To me, it was a match of the night.
Let me see. I'm just going down real quick. Yeah, I would probably say match of the night as well. After this, we had the Fatal 4-Way for the United States Championship with Randy Orton, Bobby Roode, Rusev, and Jinder Mahal. And I think another shock here, Jinder Mahal goes over. He pinned Rusev. But we're going to get Jinder Mahal with another title, and as we saw on SmackDown, we're going to get Jinder Mahal and Randy matches again.
This is just the most perplexing thing I've ever seen. No one, and I mean absolutely no one, wants to see Jinder Mahal fight Randy Orton. You have to have serious brain deficiencies to have any desire to see these people in a match again. Their world title feud was atrocious. Randy Orton is one of the most bland booked characters in all of professional wrestling. This is just really, really bad booking. They could have put the title on Rusev, or they could have made him the number one contender the next night. They chose to do neither. This was just stupid. I didn't like it. I didn't think the match was very good. I don't like the booking. I don't like anything about this.
No, not at all. Then we had one of the big matches of the evening, or by promotion, Kurt Angle and Ronda Rousey taking on Triple H and Stephanie McMahon. This was a better match, I think, than either of us definitely anticipated. I know there are certain people out there who thought that this could be a really good match. Ronda looked good in there. Kurt looked good for the amount of time he was in there. Stephanie sold well. The gripe that I have about this match is actually pretty similar to the gripe that I had with the Shayna and Ember stuff. Is Stephanie McMahon, I'm supposed to believe that she can last that long in all those submission holds that she was put into and fight them off?
Well, listen, my big problem here is Stephanie sold okay, but she also had some semi-dominant stretches through here, which were wholly unbelievable. And I think this match went too long. That was the only mistake here. There was one point during this match I was like, you know what? Shut my mouth. I was wrong. This was a really good match. It had great heat. The crowd was into it. I was worried about Kurt. I was worried about Ronda. I was worried about Stephanie. I think they all played their parts extremely well. I think Ronda looked really good. Much better than I thought she would, because she looked aggressive and she looked comfortable. She wasn't crisp. She had some problems there, but man, I mean, exceeded my expectations. But the match went probably 5 minutes longer than it had any right to go. If they would have cut this thing down a little bit, it would have been really, really good instead of just good and exceeding all expectations. And once again, I was wrong. This is a much better match than I was going to give it credit for.
Yeah, and fun fact, this was the longest match on the entire card.
Yeah, and that's my whole point. It didn't need to be that in any way, shape, or form, but I'm excited now to see Ronda Rousey wrestle. I'm excited to see Ronda go up against the rest of the card. I know there's still a lot of work to be done with her, but yeah, she made a believer out of me.
Yeah. We had the SmackDown Tag Team Championship Triple Threat next. The Usos defending against the New Day and the Bludgeon Brothers. This is a very short match, and the Bludgeon Brothers end up getting the win here and becoming the brand new SmackDown Tag Team Champions.
Well, this was what I picked. So
yeah.
I had a feeling that the Bludgeon Brothers would go over. This was a match that suffered because of time. I see the Bludgeon Brothers being almost like a mini squash match, if you can have that with that many bodies in the ring. But they didn't really have a lot to work with here. And it really, that's not very memorable. I can't really think of or remember much of what happened in this match. I think the Bludgeon Brothers going over is a fine thing, but the match in itself didn't do a lot for me.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of a particular spot, and I really can't. It's a shame because the Usos and the New Day have put on such fantastic matches over the past year that here's their neither team on Mania last year, and they get a sub-6-minute match.
But you know that's the story they were trying to tell for the Bludgeon Brothers. So it wasn't there to be a Usos and New Day classic. It was there for some other reason.
Yeah. After this, we had John Cena come out. Earlier in the show, he was sitting in the audience and was informed by a referee that The Undertaker may be there. And he came out in his gear, calling him out, and the lights went out, and we got Elias. Elias comes out and begins to sing a song. Of course, him and Cena have fisticuffs. This wasn't an actual match, but Cena beat him up. And then as Cena approaches the back, to approach the ramp, the lights go down again, and we get The Undertaker. Undertaker takes 20 minutes to come to the ring, and then beats John Cena in 2 minutes, 45 seconds. And that was that.
I have heard people just raving about this as being just one of the best things ever and extremely well booked. I just can't agree. I didn't really care for this storyline. I give them credit for doing something different. I give them credit for booking this in a way that was non-traditional and different. That's you get points for that. But overall, I had no interest in seeing The Undertaker fight John Cena, and I certainly have no interest in seeing The Undertaker, who is a beaten down old man, go out there and dominate what is essentially at least a much more full-time talent, and pretend that The Undertaker is back and The Undertaker is dominant again. It's just not the story I want to see. I'm sorry. I'm ready to move on and have other people take that mantle. And if Undertaker wants to go out there and do it, and the WWE wants him to do it, so be it. Good for them all. And if you love this, good for you. But this was not my cup of tea.
Yeah, this was probably as close to a bait and switch as WWE was going to get. It was almost as if, oh, we started this, now we have to finish it, so it's going to just be this. It was just a way to get Taker on the show, a way to get Cena on the show, and the match that people have talked about for years, literally, as the only other person Undertaker hasn't faced at Mania that means something, John Cena, they give a squash match to.
I don't mind seeing a squash match. I don't mind seeing a completely unexpected thing. I just don't know these are the two guys to do it. And Undertaker's going to be on this house show in India, in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
And he's going to fight Rusev in a casket match.
Yeah.
Undertaker is apparently they're going to do more with him. I don't get this. I'm sorry. I really don't understand.
Yeah, I don't either. We'll see what this is all about. Maybe, possibly. I don't know. Moving on, we had Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn fighting for their chance at being rehired to SmackDown Live, taking on Daniel Bryan, returning to the ring for the first time in over 2 years, and Shane McMahon. And again, something that we weren't really sure how this would go down. Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon win clean. Daniel Bryan gets the running knee and the yes lock on Sammy. Sammy taps out. KO and Sammy have no contract at this point in time.
Yeah, I thought this was pretty well done. Doing a little mini bait and switch early on with Daniel being possibly hurt and not able to compete and then kind of coming in and clearing house, I thought was a pretty good move. And Daniel looked great. The guy sold for him really, really well. The superstar of this match was not Shane McMahon. It was Daniel Bryan, and it should have been. And this was the best it could have gone. So good for everybody involved there.
Yeah, definitely. Then Alexa Bliss was defending the Raw Women's Championship against Nia Jax. Nia overcomes the odds and with having Mickey also there. And she is the new Raw Women's Champion for, it seems like, many years now. They have built her up, and she's never been able to win the big one. And finally, she does it here at a WrestleMania.
People really seem to enjoy this as well. Neither one of us picked this particular outcome here. And this was basically, if you take Mickey James, the beatdown of Mickey James on the outside, and some small times where Alexa got some offense, and this was basically a squash match to a certain degree. It actually could have been a little bit shorter, and I would have been fine with it. Nia Jax seems like a very uncommon babyface. But let's just remember this. Andre the Giant was a babyface for pretty much his entire career. And he was the biggest guy in the history of mankind, basically, when it came to professional wrestling. So I guess they could work this out. I'm not sold on Nia Jax as a babyface at this point. But yeah, prove me wrong.
Yeah, I thought it was a nice moment, a really nice moment for Nia. And we'll see how she does in her first reign here. After that, we had the WWE Championship match, AJ Styles defending against Shinsuke Nakamura, the match that I think one of the two matches that we were most anticipating, and we got a good match. I don't think it was blow the roof off the place. We already talked about how we thought that the Charlotte Asuka match was probably the match of the night, but they did a good job. Hell of a finish with AJ countering the Kinshasa into a Styles Clash to retain.
This was another one that I felt like they was rushed. They could have had a lot more time. This just was, we had so much anticipation going into this and expected so much. It was bound to disappoint. The finish was not, once again, what we expected. And afterwards, Nakamura basically turning heel was certainly unexpected, another big unexpected thing for the evening. And looking back on it, it was probably one of the biggest things that happened on the show, because I think heel Nakamura and the way they followed up with SmackDown is very, very interesting, and they can capitalize on what he does well. And I think was a really, really good move, a very shrewd and prudent move. Heel Nakamura is going to be a much, much more interesting person, performer, than the way they would have booked babyface champion Nakamura.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And so that was a great move.
Yeah. And then in what is typically called the death spot, we had the Raw Tag Team Championship match. Cesaro and Sheamus defending the titles against, as we mentioned earlier, Braun Strowman and a partner of his choosing who turned out to be a 10-year-old boy named Nicholas who was in the crowd. And Braun ends up winning the match for his team and securing the titles for him and Nicholas. Nicholas becoming the youngest champion in WWE history.
This is another thing where seeing people's positive reaction to this blows me away.
Yeah.
I get that professional wrestling is entertainment, and that a card like WrestleMania can have all kinds of different entertainment. I did not find this entertaining.
No,
that's just me. I didn't find this entertaining. I found it annoying. I found it insulting to the tag champs that have held those titles so proudly and have done the best they could with a very weak division. And I would have liked to have seen pretty much anything more than this than what they did.
If Vince Russo would have booked this, people would have been calling for his head.
Oh, they would have been apoplectic. I mean, this is Judy Bagwell winning the tag titles with Scott Steiner. This is David Arquette winning the world title. This is what that is. Now, it's not as big in the fact that it's already over and the storyline, we believe, but I did not care for it. This wasn't for me. I guess that's the best way to put it.
I remember for the previous 2 weeks talking about how I thought if they actually have Braun go out there and beat Sheamus and Cesaro for the titles by himself, that it completely brings the whole tag team division down. Then when they said, oh, he's going to have a partner, I'm like, all right, that's not going to be that big of a deal then. I actually think that this was worse than Braun beating him by himself, because, I mean, he did, but to have a child in his corner. And also, I know you've brought up this a number of times, and I've been a little less bothered by it. Okay, the funny stuff with Braun needs to kind of stop.
Yes, they are taking a character who is a serious competitor that everyone has to stand up and take notice to, and they're making him funny and comical and just this big lug, and I'm just not a fan of it. Let this guy, there's a lot more mileage before you have to go to comedy with Braun Strowman, in my opinion.
Yeah, I just, if you want to do it at once every other month. that's what I'm giving you, WWE. That's your rule from now on. Like, you have to follow it. But yeah, it's getting to be a bit too much. Then we had the main event. Brock Lesnar, Roman Reigns, Universal Championship. This did not go as we thought it was going to go. This did not go, I think, how WWE thought it was going to go. Brock.
Do you really believe that?
Well, I don't think with. Well, I know they probably expected some of the crowd reaction. I don't know if they anticipated it as much as they did. I know they didn't anticipate, apparently, Brock going off script with his celebration, aka no celebration. And apparently Brock and Vince got in a very heated argument about the finish of the match.
But how much of that is conjecture? I mean, when you say that they didn't expect him, that he didn't wasn't going to celebrate, like, is that really understood, or are we still just talking about a lot of rumors right now?
It probably is rumors. I know a lot of people were shocked about the finish.
Well, that's 100%. I mean, there is nobody in the world that thought Roman Reigns wasn't beating Brock Lesnar here. And this is that what I said about this WrestleMania. It will be remembered for the shocks. And when Brock Lesnar pinned Roman Reigns, I was like, wow, they're doing something different here. Maybe this is the best thing they've ever done in not crowning Roman Reigns at this point. Having Roman have to be pinned after 6 F5s was stupid.
Yeah.
There is a certain point where a finisher doesn't make any sense. You know, we always get WrestleMania kickouts of finishers. That's just part and parcel of what we do now. But 6, including one on an announce table, no. No, yeah. Then there's no reason to ever have anyone pinned by that move ever again. It's not Roman was just that much, you know, so had so much heart. 6, no, I'm sorry. This was a boring match. The crowd didn't like it. There were like 4 wrestling moves used in the whole thing. At one point, it looked like Brock killed Roman on the outside with an over-the-head throw, or overhead suplex, I guess you'd call it. And the crowd turned on this immediately. They were not interested in it. But I guess at the end of the day, you had Roman bleeding like a stuck pig and getting pinned by Brock Lesnar. it gets you talking. I have no idea where they're going with it. But were you happy with the finish, or what do you think?
I was fine with the finish. I mean, if Brock's going to be sticking around for a bit, that's fine and dandy. But I do want to see this title come off him sooner rather than later, because I'm just sick of seeing for a year now your top title in the hands of a guy who is on every 3 months.
Yeah, that's a problem. And if you look at the actual speculation, and that's what I think so much of this is right now, speculation, is that there's talk that he signed for one more match. And it's in that there's all this talk that they changed the finish in the ring. No, they changed it the day of, and they want Roman to win the title in front of a more sympathetic crowd. But Roman in general, he hasn't looked like a resilient babyface. He looks kind of smug and angry and paranoid, as Samoa Joe pointed out the next night.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of ways they could go with this. Will they go with any of those things? Will they go with the more interesting stuff? Probably not. They'll probably go safe, and we'll probably see champion Roman sooner rather than later. But for one night, I thought, man, they're blowing this whole thing up, and they're going a whole different direction, and it was exciting.
Yeah, and I do think that with the announcement of Brock against Roman in a steel cage at Greatest Royal Rumble, which, by the way, is a weird name, Greatest Royal Rumble, not the Greatest Royal Rumble, Greatest, I don't know. But I think that if it is Brock has one more match, we know what that one more match is.
Yeah.
And if they're going to have him win the Roman win the title in front of, yeah, an international crowd that is probably going to be more pro-Roman than anti-Roman, I could see them doing that, because it's at least being televised on the network. I don't think we're in the era where they're going to drop their change their top title on a house show with no television. I think they'll probably do that here. But Okay. Anyway, that was WrestleMania. What kind of grade do you give this pay-per-view?
You know, I probably sound a lot really negative here. I really enjoyed this show. I enjoyed this show a lot better than I did the year before, and probably the year before that. I think this was a solid B+, and that's because I was pleasantly surprised by a lot of the in-ring work. I think the storylines, I think the shocks, even when I wasn't a fan of the shock, I think were probably done for a good reason, and it shook things up a little bit. Mm-hmm. And we're professional wrestling fans that think we can call pretty much everything because we've seen it all over the years. And when they can swerve us, I think, and actually have some what looks like good storyline potential after it, I think that's overall a pretty good thing. So some pretty dumb stuff, but overall it was enjoyable. I enjoyed the show genuinely.
Yeah, I did too. I had a good time watching it, and that had to do with having good company, but also I think it was an enjoyable show. I'll give it a B. There was certainly some dumb stuff, but the good stuff and the shocking stuff that makes you think, oh, there might be trying something here, I think far outweighed the dumb stuff. So how about you take us into Monday Night Raw, Kevin?
Well, we're going to have to be a little bit quick with these things and just kind of talk about our impressions here. The opening segment with Stephanie and Ronda Rousey, this is all Austin McMahon again. And I'm ready for that not to be a thing. And they continued it with Ronda Rousey once again going after the arm and putting her in an arm bar and maybe breaking her arm. We don't know. How can Ronda Rousey go out and do this to her boss and still keep her job? I don't believe that's possible. I don't really want to see this feud. Authority figures fighting wrestlers means zero to me in this day and age. And because of that, as good as Ronda was at WrestleMania, I just cringe to think the TV we're going to see between her and Stephanie going forward.
Yeah. When starting with Ronda coming out and being all smiley, blah, 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 I get that they did that for the payoff of this segment with her being like, okay, I'll shake your hand, blah, 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 and then turn on her.
It was also an unprovoked attack. No matter how smarmy Stephanie McMahon is, she got her comeuppance the night before. You don't just go out and beat someone up for no reason, which she did. And it's just, to me, it's just lazy, and it's just paint-by-numbers booking. And Ronda Rousey needs to fight other wrestlers. She has to go out there and compete and run through a bunch of bodies. That's what needs to happen. So I'm not a huge fan of this.
Yeah, I didn't really care for it either.
I thought that Nia Jax got a pretty good reaction from the crowd. Ember Moon debuted as her tag team partner, and they fought Alexa and Mickey. This was, you know, the babyfaces are going to go over here. Both Nia and Ember Moon gets good reactions. Excited to see Ember Moon on the main roster. But man, the story that we're going to tell over Monday and Tuesday is a whole lot of extra bodies and not a lot of people going away. So yeah. I don't know how the hell you're going to put Ember Moon and other bodies on that roster and not – they still haven't done anything with Absolution, right? Yeah. They still haven't done anything with half their women's roster that has potential to do more. Sasha and Bayley haven't even been featured much before their storyline over the past three months before that. How are you going to feature Ember Moon in this? I just don't know. I hope they do it. I know you have to change things up sometimes, but – I just think that's the story of WWE. Way too much talent for the time they have allotted.
Yeah, you're dead right there, because you still have Alexa, Mickey, Nia, now Ember Moon. You have Sasha. You have Bayley. That's such a crowded roster. And that's not to mention the people who are also on there, who are kind of the also rans of sorts.
I think it's too much. I don't think they have enough for the people they currently have, let alone new talent at this point. No Way Jose, okay, second verse, same as a verse. Where does No Way Jose fit into this roster? He's basically Adam Rose.
It's gonna be Adam Rose.
He is a relatively one-note character. He got over in NXT. He's not going to stay over in WWE on the main roster. This was the biggest night of his career. I'd put a fair amount of money down on the fact that this would be the highlight of his WWE run, would be debuting, because there's not a lot for him to do. He beat a jobber in 30 seconds, fine, but I just don't know.
Yeah.
Because Braun Strowman and his tag team partner relinquished their titles earlier on in the night, we actually had a little mini tournament to decide.
Eliminator,
as Kurt Angle says, to decide who's going to fight for those titles. And the first match we got for that were the Good Brothers versus the Revival. It just reminds me of how good these guys can be and how little they matter when Braun's squashing the tag team division and making it look like a joke. The Revival won a short match. But man, if you look at the response to the Revival when they showed up last year at this time versus the same crowd not giving a shit about them.
Yeah.
And I think they've already missed a boat, and I don't know if they can revive the Revival. I wish them well, but I just don't know.
Oh yeah, you're so right there. That sucks.
Excited about Seth Rollins getting a really good reaction from the crowd. I think that they've done a pretty good job of positioning him. You know, he's been a middling babyface for a while, and I like where his character has gone. They're keeping this going, at least for that night, with Miz being upset and Finn and Seth wanting, you know, Finn wanting a piece of Seth. Jeff Hardy, for some reason, comes out. I still am perplexed by that. Was there a loose alliance with some of these guys before this? I don't remember. But it all set up a six-man tag later on. They needed a third body, and a returning Jeff Hardy fit the bill, I guess.
I feel like he was involved a little bit in the IC title picture at one point, but I don't quite 100% remember that.
It seemed a little weird to me, but Jeff Hardy also back.
Yeah.
How many bodies can they fit onto this show? Women's match with Mandy and Sasha, and this was all about setting up more interest with Sasha and Bayley coming down to the ringside, and then being the reason why Sasha lost. This just seems redundant, and we're just kind of still in a holding pattern before we can actually get these people. A couple weeks ago, they were at each other's throats and we were ready to see them tear their heads off, and now they're still pretending to be friends. I think that's a step in the wrong direction.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Paige retiring, which we all knew, I think, was coming. They had waited until after WrestleMania to finally mention it, which I think was good, because it was awkward, Paige being out there constantly with Absolution without really addressing the situation. The crowd was great, respectful. We all have to wish Paige the best, and I guess the best is becoming the SmackDown general manager, because we found out she was that the next night. But I thought the crowd handled this with class, which I'm happy about, because this could have gone in a bad direction.
Oh, yeah, it definitely could have, especially with the way the promos for her movie became like a meme online. You could have gotten people being really mean really quickly, but they didn't. So good for everyone on behaving, especially at Raw after Mania. It's still a shame to officially hear it, because she was such an integral part in women's wrestling being taken more seriously on the main stage. I'm looking forward to seeing her in a different role, but props to her for all that she did.
For sure. Bobby Lashley, lots of bodies, man. Lots of bodies. And I don't know where they're going to fit in. This guy looks incredible shape. I did not see any of Bobby Lashley's run in the WWE. I was not watching the product at that time, and I was never watching TNA. So I don't know anything about this guy. I know what I've read, and I have some basic understanding that at one point he was in a match that had something to do with Donald Trump and people in person's hairs being shaved. That's... to me, seems pretty awful. But Bobby Lashley walking right into a program, maybe with Elias. Elias got the crowd to chant, "We are scumbags," which is probably one of the best things of the night.
Yeah.
But are you excited to see Bobby Lashley back in the WWE?
No. What you were talking about during Mania is seeing people talk about how much they love this. I didn't watch TNA when Bobby Lashley was there, because Bobby Lashley was not entertaining to me when he was in WWE the first time around. Apparently he has developed charisma. He's gotten better in the ring. I mean, he's always been jacked. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But I've never been interested in Lashley. I'm still not interested in Lashley. I mean, I'm not saying that he can't win me over, but I mean, he was always a wreck on the mic. So we'll see what he's able to do against a person who is very good on the mic.
The Authors of Pain. Lots of bodies, man.
Yeah.
Lots of bodies. They, a little bit of a rough match here. I thought there was some miscues.
Definitely was.
Yeah, as they were out there to fight Slater and Rhino. And they seem to have just, in the first... their first cup of coffee on the roster, got rid of Paul Ellering as their manager, which is one of the things that made them an interesting duo, that they actually had a manager and made them that throwback tag team. Is that why? What's the point of that, Mike?
So do you want my logical?
Sure. I want you to say whatever you want.
It's probably because Paul Ellering can't do all the traveling that is required for the main roster. I mean,
yeah, that makes
sense. For NXT, he only had to come in and do tapings once a month. And a pay-per-view every once in a while. I mean, the guy's, he's old, he has a family, and I'm sure that he doesn't want to be doing the grind of WWE main roster. So I was really surprised when he came out with them, because I'm like, oh, Ellering's going to actually continue as their manager. And then when they let him go at the end there, like, okay, this kind of makes sense now. And props to them also for actually giving resolution to that instead of just abandoning it and not talking about it on the main roster. So,
you know, Mike, I like everything you said there. It was all very smart, and I agree with you. I do miss managers on the main roster.
Yeah, and I wish... And that too is WWE just hates managers.
I wish there was somebody to pick up the ball. I wish there was someone to have stole them from Ellering. I think that would have been a great storyline that we haven't seen in forever. Yeah. Samoa Joe's back. Lots of bodies, man. We're excited to see Samoa Joe back. We're excited to see him interrupt Roman Reigns, who is being booed out of the building, babbling on like an idiot. He's upset because he didn't know he was going to get his rematch against Brock Lesnar that he doesn't deserve after being squashed basically at WrestleMania. That's upsetting to Roman Reigns. They had the world on their in their hands with that, with this storyline with him and Lesnar, and they fucked it up 10 ways till Thursday. And if they do still want Roman Reigns to be a babyface, having him complain about getting a rematch is the wrong way to do it. And Samoa Joe ran down every one of those reasons, and I realized as Samoa Joe was talking that Samoa Joe is who Roman Reigns should have been all along.
Yeah,
and
that's a pretty good observation.
And that's wrapped up in a neat little bow for you, because Joe is cooler, he is more badass, he is more comfortable than Roman has ever been able to be portrayed on television. And I believe Roman has it in him, believe me in that. But Joe just came across as just the coolest guy in the room when he walked out, and he's the guy that everyone's supposed to be booing.
Yeah, that's... pretty dead on.
Yeah, but hopefully Joe is the guy. And Joe challenged Roman Reigns and said he's going to pick up the pieces after this Saudi Arabia thing match goes down. If they keep the belt off of Roman, I mean, maybe Joe's going to take the title off of him. I don't know. I'm excited to see what they do with Samoa Joe.
Yeah.
I've dubbed Bray and Matt the Woken Bunch. So the Woken Bunch beat Titus Worldwide. Okay, let's get Bray more integrated. There was a lot of comedy in here, a lot of funness, a lot of, you know, winking to the crowd. Did you care for this or not?
It was what it was.
Oh, and by the
way, the backstage thing with Jeff too.
Well, they said they were going to change Bray's character. Apparently, he now wrestles in a smock. So yes. His emergence from the Lake of Reincarnation. Threw a leather smock on over his head, and that's how he's changed.
He wore that very briefly at one point. I think it was during the Roman feud.
But he showed up in it at one point, but never really wrestled it in. So that's a change for him.
He wore it as a, like, he wore it to the ring and then took it off.
Yeah. KO and Sammy were fighting for a spot on the main roster and were solid as ever, but it went to a no contest when neither one of them could answer a 10 count, and now they have no chance on SmackDown or Raw. This is intriguing.
It is. I especially liked the finish use. They too often would go to a double DQ or a double count out, but they used... I mean, technically, this was a count out, but they used the... They couldn't reach their feet. By the count of 10, they were both down. You'd never see that anymore. So kudos to them for using a rarely used finish to a match.
And I'm also really interested to see how they continue a storyline with them. I think that's there's some novelty to that. Maybe they show up in NXT. I mean, there's a lot. I think there are plenty of ways they can go with this. And I think it makes it even more. It's more impact. The WrestleMania match is more impactful because they didn't just get jobs on Raw, which I thought was great.
Impactful, huh? I wonder if there's another wrestling promotion that they could make an impact on.
Oh, there you go. They did mention TNA. Kurt actually mentioned TNA, which the first time I think that's ever been done on Raw, on WWE television. The main event was a six-man tag that we mentioned earlier. Big props to Finn and Jeff for both sporting a lot of rainbows on their gear. I like to think that that's a response to a certain homophobe and awful excuse for a musician going into the WWE Hall of Fame earlier on or last week. But that's just the way I look at it. But nice to see that they're letting, or I'm sure that's Finn's choice or whatever, they're letting him do which is wonderful. You know, baby faces go over here. Seth pins Miz again. Still not a huge fan of that. A lot of other people could have taken a pinfall there. And this was overall just kind of a lackluster way to end this show, in my opinion. But it was fine for what it was.
I mean, we got last Raw after Mania, we had a returning Finn and Seth in a tag team match. I don't remember who they were up against, but it was just a tag team match that ended the show then too. It was somewhat lackluster.
So, yeah, so I thought that there was just a lot of moving pieces, some intriguing things going on. They did mention the Superstar Shakeup coming next week. This, in a lot of ways, is probably a holding pattern. I also wonder why they would debut all these new people on a roster when they're going to shake the rosters up the next day. But, hey, that's me asking, you know, relevant
questions.
That's
what they traditionally do. Yeah. And they don't want to break that tradition. So heading into SmackDown Live, Shane kicked things off, and he was out there to announce that Brian had resigned as the GM. Odd little moment when the crowd actually cheered that, and Shane, probably just going with a scripted talking point, goes, no, no, it's okay, it's okay. Yeah, the fans were okay with that, knowing that he's going to be a full-time wrestler, and then announces Paige as the new GM.
I think this is a good move.
Yeah,
I think it's a solid, a strong female character here is probably a good thing. She is a good talker when she's not just trying to get herself over, when sometimes she comes across as a little weird doing that, especially in her most recent run. But I think overall it's probably a good choice.
And she did a little bit of that here as she really milked the crowd for who Brian was going to be facing in his first match back on SmackDown. She just let it simmer, let the crowd chant names back at her before finally announcing that Brian's going to face AJ Styles at the end of the night in the main event, his first match on SmackDown in over 3 years.
Yeah, and let me just say, Mike, before you go any farther, I did not care for this episode of SmackDown. I'm just going to say that now, and then we can go on.
Yeah, I like the last match.
The last segment was great, but I did not care for this at all.
Yeah.
I found myself being very frustrated throughout the night. Go on.
All right, so we had the Usos and the New Day in a tag team match where the winner would go on to face the Bludgeon Brothers for the championships at Greatest Royal Rumble. Interesting that they did not give the Usos an immediate rematch, so they had to fight for it. And the Usos do end up winning, so they will face the Bludgeon Brothers at the Greatest Royal Rumble.
Good for them for actually making them fight to get that chance again, but a lot of retreaded ground on the Usos in the New Day. Then this was not one of the better showings between those, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would agree with that. We had Natty and Naomi, just a filler match that Naomi won. Naomi was the champion, so she had that dumb-looking trophy out by the stage, but that's really about it.
This was pointless. This meant nothing. Naomi has won a battle royal that they're going to say is going to be a catapult to stardom. Last year at WrestleMania, she won the championship. I don't think this is the biggest thing of her career. It won't matter. This match didn't matter. It was filler.
Yeah. Normally, I don't talk about interview segments, but I did want to touch on this because I wanted to get your opinion on it. Renee interviewing Nakamura and asking why he attacked AJ, getting a very disingenuous response from him at first, and then when she tried to press him more on it, he went to the "I don't speak English" and walked off.
Part of me wants to be a little offended by this almost, but because it's so stereotypical, but at the same time, I thought this was the best Nakamura sounded on mic at all. Him being disingenuous came across really well and was really apparent, and him saying he doesn't speak English was something that we obviously know he does speak English, and it was a little funny, and I don't know, I enjoyed it.
I kind of did too, and I could see where someone might think that it is offensive and it's racist, but he's the one saying it, and he is just doing it to piss off the other person that he's talking to.
He's doing it to get someone's goat, so I thought it was it was pretty good.
Charlotte came out to cut a promo and talk about the big match with Asuka, and is cut off by the now-dubbed Iconics, Peyton Royce and Billy Kay, and they mock Charlotte relentlessly before getting into an attack where Charlotte tried to fight off, but she was overwhelmed by two people. They beat her down. It was a kind of bad-looking beatdown at some points. Like, some of the shots looked really weak and didn't really look like they were hitting her much there.
Great to see them on the main roster, because I'm very high on them both, but I don't see where they fit in. I don't see how they can put more bodies on this roster. They've done nothing with Lana. Nothing.
Yeah.
The Riot Squad is... two of the members of the Riot Squad have done absolutely nothing. They've got Natty. They've got Naomi, who just won this major battle royal. What's she going
to
do?
There's Tamina.
Well, that's not... we don't have to talk about her. But there's just no place, in my opinion, here. But they did a good job. I think that their scripted material was pretty painful, but they did their best to sell it really, really well. And
I think it works a little for their characters. But...
I thought that their part of this was pretty good, and then the Carmella cash-in, I thought, was the hottest garbage of all hot garbage that's ever been hot garbage.
Yeah.
When did people start to like the Carmella character? And I've seen so much stuff about people loving this. Carmella screaming has become the most painful thing I've ever had to listen to. She has been booked like absolute trash. And this is not her fault, by the way. She's been booked terribly, terribly for what seems like a year. She has been an afterthought. She has done nothing of note. She has not been great. It's not like she's earned her stripes in the ring and had great matches while being, you know, shit on by the company. No, she's an afterthought. She's a weak character at this point. And not only that, Charlotte just beat frickin' Asuka.
Mm-hmm.
Two nights before. Took her undefeated streak. This is Charlotte reigns supreme territory, and they take the belt off of her to put it on one of the most uninteresting and weak characters in the entire division. This is idiotic. This is dumb. This was bad. This just left a bad taste in my mouth. I was angry through the rest of this show after this.
Yeah. I felt very uninterested. Luckily, there was a Brian and AJ match coming up that prevented me from probably turning the TV off. But yeah, this was beyond stupid. You and I know that there's people who will argue this, but I think that people only were chanting for and cheering for Carmella because it was a cash-in. I think they would have done that for anyone who had that briefcase, and it just happened to be a person who's been booked terribly that got all those cheers. And I mean, you hit every nail on the head right there, that you gave her this big, huge win 2 days prior, and to just topple the whole tower after that, for what? For this?
I don't get it. Dumbfounded.
And to make things even worse, we had Randy Orton win a triple threat for number one contendership for the U.S. title, so we get Randy Orton and Jinder Mahal matches again, a thing that we thought we were finished with heading into 2018. But no, this is one of the worst things about 2017 that is coming back to us again.
I've already spoken about this. This was idiotic. This is not a match anyone wants to see. Jinder as champion is not the worst thing in the world. Rusev chasing Jinder could have been great, because you have a heel that everyone despises and wants to see get beat, and you've got a guy who is like nuclear over. Everybody wants to see this guy win.
And they have history.
There's so much here. And no, Randy fucking Orton is going to go after Jinder Mahal. And once again, Rusev's pushed to the side. This is just idiotic. They refuse to just roll with the punches and let someone naturally get over and go on to do something special. And now Rusev is going to fight Undertaker. You know what they're going to say? Well, this is just showing you how popular Rusev is, that we're going to put him in the ring and get the rub from The Undertaker. No, The Undertaker ran through John Cena in 4 minutes. You don't think he's going to run through Rusev in the same way? Unbelievable. The hubris of the WWE to basically once again, and this has been that long-standing thing, you don't get over until we say you can get over. And I hate when people mention that because I'm like, that can't be true. How is it not true in this case?
But this cattiness makes it seem like it is.
Absolutely. And I just don't understand. And they're doing it not for the sake of another good story, which is sometimes what happens and we forget. They're doing it for the sake of a garbage story that no one wants to see.
Yeah. It's almost just to spite us.
That's what it feels like.
Yeah. Then we got Brian versus AJ. We had a really nice match going on here. And then Shinsuke Nakamura interrupts and attacks both guys. Brian eats a knee to the back of the head. AJ gets a low blow and then eats a Kinshasa. I mean, the crowd were booing Nakamura. That it was, I mean, how better of a way to really solidify Nakamura as a heel than by attacking two guys so beloved by the crowd as Daniel Bryan and AJ Styles.
And attacking and stopping a match, which was very well done, and a match that everybody wants to see. He took, not only did he hurt guys that we love, but he took the clean finish away from us. He took the match away from us. That is what a great heel does. And I shit on the show because of how frustrated I was with other parts of it. This was picture perfect.
Yeah,
this was picture perfect. Was. And Daniel and Daniel looked good, and AJ and him had chemistry, and this could be a really good thing. And Nakamura just looked like a smug, angry. I don't know. Nakamura, that swagger. I was like, how can you not cheer Nakamura's charisma? Oh, I can see it. He's a great heel, and I think he's going to do a great job here.
Yeah, I really think that this is a great change for him. He's been a heel before in Japan, and really is that's where he developed the swagger and the character that he is now. So I really hope that that goes well. But that did it for WrestleMania weekend and the WWE. A couple interesting things that I read about the past couple days. And just wanted to get your quick thoughts on them. Apparently, tournament is a word that Vince McMahon no longer likes. That's why it's called the Tag Team Eliminator.
Yeah, because, you know, the that basketball tournament thingy, that's not a thing. That is one of the most popular things in all of sports.
Yeah.
They don't do a tournament, right? So, yeah.
And also, this seems strange coming off of the heels of the slight at TNA, but WWE and TNA are actually working together on a Hardys documentary.
Oh, really?
To where WWE is heading up the production on it, but they have an agreement with TNA that they're going to use, well, Impact Wrestling, where Impact's going to give them the footage from their times in Impact and TNA and are, I guess, co-producing this with them.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah. I mean, good for them to finally work with someone that they have kind of even chose to ignore for so long. So, I mean, it's not like I'm fawning for it, but I think that's one relatively interesting.
Yeah. But I think that does it for a pretty long episode, a long weekend of wrestling. Anything else you want to add?
No. One thing. I watched the Andre the Giant documentary on HBO, and it is incredibly well done and really great. And if you're a wrestling fan, you definitely should check it out.
I plan on doing that soon. I have not watched it yet, but really looking forward to it. Maybe we'll talk a little bit more about that next week. But in the meantime, make sure everyone, you check out our social media. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at Miss Spots, also on Instagram at Miss Spots. You can like us on Facebook, facebook.com/Miss Spots. You can listen to this podcast in one of many different wonderful fashions, such as our website, MissSpotsPodcast.com, or simply MissSpots.com. We're also available on most of the services for podcasts, such as iTunes, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn, Podcast Addict, Overcast. You can subscribe to us on all of those and get brand new episodes delivered to the device of your choice every Thursday. For Kevin, my name's Mike. We'll catch you guys next week. Good night. Good wrestling.